Paul's House and Storm's House. It's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
That's a big biscuit.
You'll have to sit sideways. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And you are listening to This Is... Wow, I'm thrown off already.
Well, you haven't told them what the show is.
That's what I was trying to do when I gave the wrong setup.
Well,
nonetheless, Daniels. We are still... This is Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Today is Tuesday, February 23rd, 2010.
And you are listening to show 076.
And we lied, Paul.
Did we lie?
Well, Kim and Greg lied. Uh-huh. We are not, in fact, at Paul's house and Storm's house.
No, this is true. Often we do lie, and we don't even tell you this time. We are telling you the lie.
We are, in fact, in Hollywood, California for a star-studded edition.
That's right. This may be... our first panel show of a sort.
Well, if the sauna doesn't count as a panel.
That wasn't really a panel. That was more of a
paneling.
More of a sweat.
Yeah.
And everybody was drunk, whereas you are the only person drunk right now.
I'm not drunk.
Let's get rid of the business.
Don't tarnish me with
how
the drunks.
How many minions
when I'm not
do we
drunk?
Have right now?
We have 277 minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions. Go to paulandstorm.com to find out about that because it's a special thing to be.
So we didn't do a podcast last week. We apologize for that.
Sorry.
Now, if the reason we sound stilted and different than we usually do...
We don't. We're just as stilted as ever.
Well, especially
stilted.
It's
weird
stilted.
Seeing you
it's
when we
odd.
Do this.
I know. We gotta understand, those of you who, for some reason, don't know, we usually record this separately at our own homes whilst on Skype or on the phone with each other.
And on Twitter at the same time when we're being boring.
Yeah. But right now we are sitting... in what is one of the spare rooms of a Hollywood casting office.
Could be described as cold and soulless.
Yeah, they're actually outside in the lobby. They appear to be having a casting call for, quote, tough children, unquote, which appears to involve children from the ages of 13 through 27.
Who won't stop chewing gum.
But, I mean, it's like, you know, some of them are dressed up as Fonzie.
Yeah.
And there's one with, like, the one, the 12-year-old I saw had the white T-shirt with the sleeve rolled up.
Now, I understand, Kim, is it correct? This is primarily a commercials that they cast, so they're not, like, redoing...
The Outsiders.
The Outsiders, for example, because there seems to be a range of kids' ages.
Let us explain, actually, the Kim that he's referring to. We are here with our very good friends, Kim Evie.
Say hello, Kim.
Hello, Kim.
Aww. Kim is, among many other things, a fine actress, a wonderful raconteur, and also the producer of, among other things, the web series The Guild.
Da-na-na-na.
And we're also here with her husband, Greg Benson. Make some sort of random noises, Greg.
Hi!
How utterly random of you. Greg is also an actor, is married to the lovely Kim Evie.
Or was that a secret? Was that a secret?
Did I talk out of school?
Oh, no, people know that we're married. It's okay.
Okay, just making sure.
But Greg, what they don't know is that we're really brother and sister.
Intrigues.
Man. But anyway, we're here with them. Greg also does, among many things, as you will see on the link when we list his name in the listing for this podcast, I guess you would call it a series called Mediocre Films, which is also his film company. They post things on YouTube that are extremely funny. Except when we're involved, in which case they are occasionally mildly funny.
And somewhat doughy.
Yes, yes. 80% doughier when we're in them. But anyway, Greg and Kim are here. We are set up in this casting office, and we are filming. Not only are we recording audio.
Well, we can't really say what we're doing. We're doing things. All the stuff.
Okay, we're doing things.
When we talk about, we're doing these awesome things. Now we're in Hollywood to prove it.
That's right. We took a trip to California just so we could videotape our podcast.
That's right. And that's doing things.
That's
if you look in the Webster's Encyclopedia of Doing Things, that's what you'll find.
So that is the long roundabout way of explaining that we are here in a big room talking into a single microphone a little ways away from us. And we are going to, whether they want it or not, involve our friends Kim and Greg eventually at some point
that's
during
right.
this podcast.
Because we're not here just to show that we're Hollywood douchebags, which we've established in episode blah, 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 insert later.
Yeah.
Now, per usual, I've done extensive research and...
And I have done none.
...scratched down some things. Let me start with an easy one.
Okay.
Are scallions and spring onions the same thing?
You're asking me?
Anyone who might know. I'm just curious.
I thought green onions are not the same. Scallions, spring onions. You know what? I have no answer. I
They're
have no
different.
Good answer. They are different.
They are.
Greg, see, I knew we had Greg here for a reason. Greg, come on around
Greg,
towards the
please
microphone.
Please enlighten me because it bugs me. When
Greg
they,
Benson, ladies
Greg
and gentlemen.
Greg Benson.
Oh, please. Come on. This is really not necessary that you stop clapping.
I can't. I have my notes and a pen. It's very heavy.
You know, I don't know what the difference is exactly, but strangely enough, just this past Thanksgiving, I was in a grocery store, and I asked the produce guy, because they know everything.
Sure, it's their job?
Yeah. I said, are green onions and scallions the same thing? Because I had, you know, one or the other on the shopping list for my, I think, sister-in-law. I was shopping for her for something. And they said, no, in fact, they are different. But for the purposes of shopping here, yeah, they're basically the same thing.
Because I've never been to a grocery store where you might have, like, say, leeks, and then, you know, rhubarb, and then green onions, then scallions.
Yeah, that would have to be a pretty fancy schmancy grocery store.
Yeah, I think it's bullshit. I do know that green squash and zucchini are different.
Well, you have some fancy pants there.
Yeah, he's working his knowledge.
Very fancy.
His knowledge of produce. So that was horrifically interesting. What else you got written for us?
Well, I have a couple of stories that are stories, one of which people asked about.
But yes, that's right.
I have a more general thing if we want to nibble on something else first.
I would like to go to this story because I think it may be the most interesting because I do not know it. A couple of podcasts back, we were talking about something. I believe we were talking about Indiana Jones and the bullwhip
and
that
I had.
And in passing, almost, you said something about, that was the time I almost died, but
correct.
That's another story.
Correct.
We never got back to that, and I need to know when you almost died.
Okay, just to recap, in case you haven't heard that podcast, the summer of 1983, the summer of If This Is It by Huey Lewis in the News, family vacation to Mexico. And it started in Mexico City, went to Taxco, the silver town in the hills between Mexico City and Acapulco. And in Acapulco is where I almost died.
Okay.
On this trip, my dad decided wisely that I should learn how to drink in my family's presence versus turning 15, ending up at some party, and then ending up under the wheels
right.
of a Pinto.
That's progressive yet wise, yeah.
Right, which is the family's motto.
Right, it's on the crest.
So throughout this trip, I was drinking more and more Tres Equis. Like, Dos Equis.
Right, right.
This was like the serious stuff.
Okay.
Or the stuff that Americans didn't like and they didn't export.
Right.
And I guess I thought I was used to beer by the time we got to Acapulco. And I remember drinking buckets of it at a place called Carlos and Charlie's, which is just sort of a Bennigan's type place.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hot in the middle of the day, and I now know I was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And all the time we've been in Acapulco for a couple of days, we saw parasailers going back and forth, where you have a parachute on.
Right.
And in this case, you start on the beach, and you run, and there's a boat that goes out, and you're tied to it like an umbilical cord.
Right, right.
Up you go, you fly around. It's very pretty. You come back down very gracefully.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I wanted to do parasailing.
The theory, anyway, is gracefully.
Sure, absolutely. Everybody doing it was very graceful. Mm-hmm. They were ballerinas with sheets on their backs.
Gotcha.
That's what it looked like to me, because I was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, hey, I'd like to do that. And Dad thought that would be a good idea, too. And it would have been, except in order to parasail, being in the wind and all, I had to remove my glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And I did so. And they only spoke somewhat English.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke none what Spanish.
I love that dialect, somewhat English.
Yes. Thing. Yes. They up glasses and drown. But we'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to drown later. But the idea was... Here, you do this, you do that. I don't know, poor Greg.
He's just sitting just here sitting awkwardly here. Next to us waiting for us to involve him. But no, this is your tale. You go with
it. I'm not even listening. Honestly, I'm trying to remember what the verses are to If This Is It by Huey Lewis. I'm stuck on the refrain now.
Please let me know if this ain't love. Let me know if this is it. The verses aren't really very interesting.
Yeah, frankly. I can't remember what the verses are. I get the refrain over and over.
I can sing the whole thing, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, well, later.
Yeah. Good.
So
maybe that's your song at the end. Just well, you singing an acapella.
That's dangerous.
And us booing you.
It'd be so sad. Just throwing shit at you.
Just like our stage show. That'd be fantastic. Am I drunk right now?
The lonely solo of Greg DiCostanza.
I'm gonna step out while you do the
sure,
rest of the
we'll
story.
Call so you in when
so
we
that
meet
I don't
you.
Distract you anymore.
We'll call you, Greg.
Yeah,
thanks for coming
I'm
in.
Sure you
no,
will.
We just felt bad for you having to sit here.
Well, don't feel bad for me. I'm gonna have an M&M.
Oh, you lucky bastard.
No, I did well. It's my reward.
So you were saying they spoke no English or they spoke somewhat English. You spoke none such Spanish.
Correct. It was before my high school Spanish days. And I got the part that I was supposed to, like, once I was up, that they would signal me. I would look down mm-hmm. when I reached a certain part of the bay, and Pablo would wave this red flag, mm-hmm. which was my cue to reach up and pull the line on the parasail that had a red flag.
Right.
Very easy, and they timed it out,
mm-hmm.
and I would land gracefully like a ballerina with a bed sheet.
Yeah, the aforementioned.
Which was my dream.
Yeah.
And I'm up there without my glasses, and it only dawns on me then that I'm just blind.
You can't see
right.
the boat.
That glasses are great, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
not if you're not wearing
There's
them.
A reason for the shirt, my friend.
So... I look down, and it's all one big blur of Pablo's.
Blur of Pablo's is the front runner for the name of this podcast, by the way.
And is also my Richie Havens tribute. Thank Hi-oh. You very much. Valens.
It makes no Richie sense. Havens. No, because he's high, so it's Richie Havens.
So there I am, and it's one big blur of Pablo's. And I'm getting panicked because I know I'm somewhere near the shore, but I don't know exactly where.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look up, and I can't even tell which one is the one with the red flag line to
right.
pull. So,
because you're fucking blind.
I'm fucking blind. And so I pull like three of them.
I'm picturing like the Chuck Jones cartoon where like some laundry and
right,
utensils
and the backpack
are going to pop
out. Instead of a parachute?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I only wished a fork had fallen out. And the most horrifying thing, it would have been fine if I'd pulled it. The parachute had broken, and I just sort of plummeted to my death.
Right.
You know, it would have happened quickly. It would have been
right.
over.
Right.
As it was, I start going down, and I think, great, it's working. I'm going down, mm-hmm. and I seem to be going towards the beach. But then the lower I get, the more apparent it's becoming that I'm not going to land anywhere near the shore. In fact, you could say I'm landing closer to the ocean than Acapulco Bay.
Right.
Maybe not quite that much.
Uh-huh.
But very much not. Solid ground. And slow motion, it's 50 feet, 40, 30.
And you look down and there's just eight shark mouths open
yes,
waiting for you.
Comically.
Yeah.
Comically.
They're like tying napkins around their neck and they got fork and knives in their fins somehow.
They were very patient, but they were prepared. And splashdown right in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been bad enough. I could swim.
Right.
But not with this umbilical cord, which
right.
10 seconds after I landed, you know, the little speedboat is still racing forward.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, hook! I'm being pulled along by my midsection, which is pushing my head down into the water,
uh-huh.
making it very difficult to do things like breathe.
Okay, well, I would blame that part on Pedro, seeing what, like the part where you hit the water might have been the time to stop going forward at full speed.
Well, I don't know exactly what was happening.
Okay.
Like, it could be there was slack and, you know,
right.
the engineering that goes into parasailing was misaligned.
Right.
But nonetheless, I was having a very tough time of it. And I remember at last, finally, the thing stopped. That was almost dead, part one.
Right. Oh, part one. There's multiple parts.
This is not the end of the story, sadly. Nor is it the end of the storm, which is kind of happy. I was not stormed back then.
Spoiler alert, storm survives.
Yeah. By the way, folks, it came out fine. So then, after about 30 seconds, the crew comes up, and I think, thank God, they're going to pull me out of here. I'm gasping seawater or bay water, whatever it was. And they're just really pissed off because they're going to have to dry out their parachute before they can make more money.
Mm-hmm.
And so they take the thing off. And I remember they knew just enough English to ask, can you swim? And I said, "See," because I could. And I was an honest little boy.
Right.
Well, not so little. And drunk, right. Don't forget.
In the mix here.
Don't forget I was still drunk.
15-year-old, first time ever drunk.
Yeah. So I say yes. They strip off the whole harness, put it into the speedboat, and take off to shore.
They showed you.
Leaving me about a half mile into Acapulco Bay.
Which is right next to Acapulco Bay.
Correct. Right to the left
Acapulco.
Of the... Acapulco. Right. The cliff divers are two over. They just have the shelf divers. So... I start swimming back, and there's just a horrible, riptide that's fighting me the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember thinking that this was where I was going to die,
because
I'm still trying to expel the old water out of my lungs.
Right.
And it was 50 feet out, and I remember straggling up to shore, and the boat crew was sort of making their way back in, and a rival boat crew goes ripping by, laughing and cursing at the other boat crew and pointing at me like, suckers, you're not going to make any money today, and one of your people's going to die.
Now, was your dad or any of your family there at all? Where were they in all of this?
Well, that's the funny thing. I thought for sure it would be like the end of that Billy Joel video, Second Wind.
Yeah.
When all the people would gather around and be like, he's alive. No, I think my dad just had assumed that I was still up in the air or something. And when I came back, I sort of straggled back to the beach blanket where everybody was set up.
Collapsed and vomited a liter of ocean water.
Yeah. So how'd it go? And it was like, an old movie. Wah, 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 wah.
It's like the end of an Electric Company sketch.
Yeah. So that's probably the closest I've come to real actual death.
You really did almost die. That's
I don't kid about that kind of thing.
I am compelled by that story.
Have you ever almost died? Had a
never
run in
really.
A train?
Really, the closest I ever came, I was about, I want to say, 9 years old.
Go ahead.
And
say it.
I'll say it. I was 9 years old.
Right.
I lived at the time, at the time on a relatively busy street. It was, one lane in each direction, but it was a main thoroughfare of...
This is the house that I know that...
Yeah, the house that
know.
Yeah, there's pretty much a steady stream of traffic. Like, you could cross it. It's not like you had to wait for a crosswalk or anything, but it was generally busy most of the day.
It's the gateway to Trenton.
Yes. Well, and we know everybody needs to be in Trenton, so...
Mm-hmm, the world takes.
And it was there was a field directly across from my house, across that street, where we would go, and it was just like a vacant lot. We would go and play football there and such.
Right, the monkey field.
Monkey field, yes. And
I've never called a field like that a monkey field.
Nor did we, but apparently now it's a monkey field. And it was late at night, not late at night, but past dusk. So there was very little light. Let's say it was 6:30, and it was in the winter, so the ground. There had been some snow and some rain. There were some icy patches on the street.
Right.
And I was pretty good at crossing the street, and my parents were...
I would hope so, by 9 o'clock.
Yeah. There's lots of parents that would never have let their kid cross that street. Lots of protective parents would... I would have a tough time letting my kids cross that street now, and my oldest is almost 13.
Understood.
But my parents... trusted me enough, and I was a
you had
kid.
Progressive parents
I did
as
too.
Well.
But long story short, not that this is very interesting, I was waiting to run back from the field to my house, and it was very dark, and I had just enough of an opening, where I would be able to make it across both lanes, made it across the first lane okay, got to the second lane, and there was an icy patch, and I started to slip forward.
Right.
And just barely caught myself and stumbled to the edge of the street, or the sidewalk, the opposite sidewalk, and sort of collapsed on the ground, you know, as a car is lumbering at me. And realizing, like, if my reflexes had been, like, a half second slower, I would have just fallen on the ground, and there was no way that car was going to stop in time.
You would have been an asphalt melon.
I would have totally been that, you know, tragedy in Morrisville, Pennsylvania today when a 9-year-old boy crossing the street.
Would that be horrible? Like, you know, if you do know your death after you die, that you were just like a 3-inch article in a local paper mm-hmm. next to the item about, you know, children's clothes for sale this weekend.
Yeah, and the YMCA is mm-hmm. hosting an open house.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not nearly as interesting or colorful as your story, nor was I drunk.
No, I liked it. I liked it a lot. Okay. The part about the werewolf.
Oh, well, you know, that's a whole nother thing. We'll get to that in another podcast.
Was amazing.
I would like to start a new topic, and I would like to employ our friends, Greg and Kim.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because, as was mentioned, we are here in a casting office. Greg, Kim, please join us. Come near the microphone, ladies and gentlemen. Greg and Kim!
Yay!
Oh, come on!
Say hello to the listeners, Greg and Kim.
Hello.
Hello there.
So, as we've said, we're here in a commercial casting office, and first of all, I would like to say that just sort of looking at the kids out there and the parents sitting with them genuinely hurt my heart.
Did it really?
For a parent?
Just, it
or
just,
the, person.
The kids all had, the ones that didn't have a thumb, the ones that didn't have a, we have to talk a little silently because they're right out there.
Right. They don't know how pathetic they are.
I mean, I don't want to judge. It's just the kids that didn't have a 1,000-yard stare just looked kind of bored. And the parents all just sort of have that Mama Rose look to them of, you know, this is really more about them than their kids.
Are these walls insulated?
They're not. No, they can probably hear
Own mind extrapolating what the day-to-day existence of a lot of these kids must be, of just sitting in all these same lobbies, two, three times a month, yeah. Whatever it is, sitting and waiting and going and doing their 2-minute reading and not getting the part and going back and doing it all over again. It seems so demoralizing to me. I can't imagine I can't imagine as a 40-year-old man almost going through it, much less like a 9-year-old kid.
Someone's going to burst through that door with like a rolling pin any
yeah.
second.
Yeah.
Why are you saying around that?
My kids are adorable.
The thing is, some kids do get a lot of work and they enjoy it. So I know that when I work on jobs with kids, they're very quick to brag about all the work that they're doing in mm-hmm. different movies. And, uh-huh. and I think that when kids do start to get the work, it does give them a feeling of independence. And granted, it's probably, you know,
yeah.
too young for their own good. But
right.
Because there's a lot of problems with
But I
child
see what
stardom.
Paul's saying, because the flip side of that, because once a kid is great, they do work all the time.
Right.
But my heart also
yeah.
goes out to those kids who
the kids are just never going to make
work,
it.
Who
yeah.
just are never going to make it and who don't really, like, how many years is it going to take for them to realize, oh, I should not be doing this.
And then suddenly you've got a kid who has peaked at, say, 13 years old.
Do you think that robots could maybe solve this problem, that robots could be used in the roles?
Like kid robots?
Well, they used robots in that movie, AI.
Those were real.
Yeah. They couldn't get Haley mm-hmm. Joel Osment for that movie, so they used a robot version.
Haley Joel Osment.
Spielberg is a powerful guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, now, the reason I brought you over here, that was all preamble and setting the scene that we're in a casting office. And we had a variation on this discussion earlier before we were recording. I'm wondering if, like, just sort of audition experiences, has there ever been, like, the scene from Swingers, if you remember, where Vince Vaughn is regaling the tale of how he's auditioned for some after-school special and he nails the audition and it turns out that he was auditioning for the part of what was supposed to be a 12-year-old character. And I'm wondering, have there ever been any auditions that you have gone on and it's been obvious from second one that you were just completely wrong for it, and why the hell would they have called you in the first place?
And yet, you went through.
And yet you just sort of soldiered on through it.
Happens all the time.
Really?
Kim?
Oh, well, the first one that came to mind was, for me, was something that I actually ended up booking. but it was a thing where the dialect was written, like, fairly ebonically. Mm. And so I thought, well, he wrote this for a black woman. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
And Kim is not black, by the way.
I am Asian. So I wasn't sure if should attempt that or what. You know, mm-hmm. I was very confused. And so I did it the first read. And at the very end, I got a little sassy. And the casting mm-hmm. director said, I like at the end when you were a little more, you know, go girlfriend kind of thing. And he said, so do that. And I thought, okay. So I did it again, all like that. And he said, all right, thank you. And I left just with burning shame because I was like, that was, why would I think for a second that? And then I got called back.
Wow.
And I thought, what? What's happening? What do I do now? Because I knew very well that was what I should do going into the room. But but when I went into the casting callback room, it was just full of African Americans. And so that immediately made me think like, this is wrong. I should not do this at all.
You're drinking their milkshake.
Yeah, it's just a bad idea. Well, it's not even like that I would take. I don't even think they were there for that part. I think it was for kids.
Okay.
But it just happened to be that I was at the tail end of when it was going to change over.
Yes.
So, the category. So I went in, bit the bullet, did it full on like that, got the part.
Wow.
And then ended up, and then when I was on set again, same thing. Like the scene is supposed to be like a women's support group, and half the women in the scene are black, and one of them is Whoopi Goldberg's daughter or half daughter.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, now I really feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I
feel really, you feel like you need stupid. To take a moment to apologize to everyone in the room.
Yeah, and what I wouldn't do between takes was talk. Because I just felt like, God, this is horrible. And now, actually, you can see this on my reel.
Was it early? Yeah. Was it one of your early experiences?
Yeah, it was. I think maybe the second role that I ever booked.
If we ask nicely, will you do just a little? Do
more little no, but I will tell you, you can actually go to my website, and I believe that it's on there.
Is it on your reel?
Last clip on my reel.
Oh. Yeah. Is that KimEvey.com?
So, yeah, I think.
EVEY.
We're all going to go and see it.
Yep. And now it crashes.
Oh, I know,
everybody going and watching that clip.
Yeah. I did say, I remember the first line was, I shouldn't have even stopped here.
Yeah.
Wow.
The clock is ticking.
And was it spelled like SHOULD apostrophe NA?
Like I said, it was written out very specific.
At least they didn't ask you to do it in dark face.
Yeah.
That would have been really embarrassing.
Dark Faces was a really, really good, very short run comic. DC, I think it was like 4 issues.
I loved Dark Face. I was a big fan of that.
Well, that was my favorite superhero, in fact.
Yeah. Absolutely.
He just sort of never well lit was his superpower. he could stand out in the middle of the sun and somehow you couldn't make out his features.
Yeah.
And he knew every Al Jolson song.
That's a strange hybrid.
So how about you, Mr. Greg? Have you ever been racially misappropriated?
I've definitely gone in for jobs where I thought, boy, this just doesn't seem right. And then you see the commercial on the air or the TV show on the air and you realize that they have cast someone who is dramatically older or who is black or anything that's very different. Or in many cases, you know, a woman might get a part that I've auditioned for. And I guess my feminine side just didn't shine through enough. But it's strange because the very first commercial that I booked out in L.A. back in 92, I think. I just moved here the year previous. And I auditioned for so at the time I was 22, 23 years old, right?
Okay.
And I auditioned for the role of a dad who had 3 kids.
Okay.
I thought, I'm 22 years old and the kids are, it's just not possible.
And the kids are like 18 and 17.
They were, I think, 2, 4, and 6.
Okay.
Still, not really feasible.
You've been having to get busy like really young, like hillbilly.
Yeah.
Young.
And you were probably very, even at that age, young looking for that age that you were.
I guess I must have looked older because I booked the part.
That was
for a Walt Disney commercial for the videotape release of Winnie the Pooh. And I've never even seen the commercial, so if anyone out there finds it, you know, I'd like to see that. But it was,
Were you all gathering in front of the TV?
Exactly.
May have seen that.
We're gathering in front of the TV and we're starting the tape and we're going to watch the Winnie the Pooh, you know, video release. And I had a 2, 4, and 6-year-old. And
what was that like? Did you actually kind of think about, had you thought about what it would be like to be a father before, or did it kind of force you to get in that mode?
No, never. Really, it just made me feel like, oh boy, they're going to fire me any second. The wife was older, And the kids, it just didn't look possible to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was one of those jobs where this usually there's an audition and then there's a callback. Where, and at the callback, you meet the director, you meet the clients, mm-hmm. the people from the agency. And then, you know, they right. all decide. Well, this job, there was just the initial audition. There was no callback.
Mm-hmm.
So I met everybody on set for the first time. And I could tell they were giving me that, boy, he's young look.
Yeah. Right. I'm sure we did the right thing here.
And, you know, we've all gotten that one.
Yeah. I still get it. Oh, I get the boy isn't he young. He's too handsome.
Greg is 88 years old.
Yes, I am. But I do look younger. But I didn't get fired, and I think it was just luck because they can let you go at the last.
I was going to say, can I
job.
Ask how, if it's not too personal? Like, have you gotten jobs and then gotten fired within, say, the first hour, or even like started some filming and somebody said, "This isn't working out. Go get me the replacement, Greg."
I haven't, but I have. I know some people who have been fired. They've been hired, say, for a sitcom. They've gone to the table reading, which is the first thing you do. You read the whole script around a table, and then after the table reading, you know, he really didn't get laughs on his lines, and then they fire him, and then the next day there's somebody else.
Let me ask, Greg. You do a lot of directing.
I do. Yes, I do that.
So on the flip side, have you ever gone into your auditions and thought you knew exactly what you're looking for, and then been so pleasantly surprised by someone, and it just worked great?
The thing that comes to mind right away is a short that I directed for 20th Century Fox for one of their Christmas card videos. I directed two of those a couple years in a row, and one of them was about a little girl, and there was a twist on her seeing Santa Claus come in and setting a gift down under the tree. And but I'd written it for the role of a little boy because there's something about it that seemed a little creepy if it was a girl. And so we auditioned a bunch of little boys, and nobody was just right. But one mother was there with her son who I was auditioning and his sister.
Yeah.
And she said, "Can I bring her in also?" And I said, "Yeah, sure, you know, while she's here." And she came in and she just nailed it.
Yeah.
She was so great, and I was so thrilled to find her that I thought, okay, well, she gets the part.
Wow.
You know?
That must have been completely scarring for the brother.
For the brother? Yeah. Well, he committed suicide shortly thereafter.
Fantastic.
It's a real funny story, actually. Okay, now, by the way, we have no idea where the 10-minute mark is
because we've just been
rolling. Well, you can tell
Greg
us.
Greg is going to hook us up.
I think this may well be an extra long episode because I'm having
a good time
here.
Well, it's a double episode because we didn't do last week.
I think you've gone 24 minutes.
Okay, we're
just
in
so
the
you
zone.
All know, if you didn't know by looking at how big the damn file was, I think this may be a little supersized.
Yeah,
edition.
I mean, we didn't do a podcast last week. We've been doing awesome things, and so it's awesome.
Because I want to switch to an entirely different,
but
related topic that these guys can talk about, can address in their own ways.
That's French. I recognize the French.
Yeah,
I was going for a Slavic.
Oh. Wait, I want to insert really quickly.
Please do.
I don't know if you know this, but Blades, played by Vince Cassel.
Yeah.
Yes.
That character was originally conceived as like a little brainiac bow tie.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I think he's terrific.
Those were the kinds
to
of
be,
kids,
yeah.
you know, that we saw, and then Vince walked in and did his thing, and it was just like.
And was he coming in as the bow tie kid, or he just came in to do his thing?
He was like Blades that we know and love today.
Like, how did he even get to where you
like
it was just, you know, through pictures, like, we, you know, you pick from the photos, and it was like, oh, well, that's an interesting choice, let's see him too, just because why not, maybe he'll,
because a number of the folks in the guild, you are all did improv together, is that correct?
Felicia, Sandeep, and Jeff,
so the core
together. Yeah.
Wow. This is the web series The Guild, created by Felicia Day. Anybody listening to this podcast probably does know what it is, but just in case, you're going to get lost over the next 10 minutes.
okay, anyway, that's all.
But so as we say, you know, being the producer of The Guild and being a very well-viewed regular YouTube contributor, Greg.
YouTube channeler.
YouTube channel, you know, as you have listened to on our podcast over the many, many weeks, we, and especially I, share an interesting relationship and love to analyze our own fame to the extent that it exists. And
navel gazing is fun.
Well, yeah, but, you know, trying to gain perspective on things and just...
It's marketing.
Yeah, it's marketing.
Marketing research.
I mean, it's not all sitting around going, oh, look how famous I am, isn't this neato? But just sort of, it's weird from being a kid who sat around at 6 years old saying, I would literally love to be famous and in movies and be in Star Wars. To suddenly, you know, have achieved a certain level of recognition.
If George Lucas is listening, I still want to be in Star Wars.
I want to be Luke Skywalker, specifically.
Chewbacca.
If he's listening, I did not see episodes 1 through 3.
So there, take that, Lucas.
Zam!
Oh, and lose some weight, you big rich guy.
Oh, do you like Star Wars?
I do. I very much like episodes 4 and 5.
Okay, do you like Star Wars?
I like Star Wars.
Okay, thank you.
There we go.
Absolutely.
Just a thing. But anyway, one of the things we have discussed in the past is sort of paying attention to people's reaction to us, like, say, going out and doing Google searches on our on Paul N. Storm and Paul ampersand Storm, and seeing how, what people comment about on our website and the forums and things like that. And, you know, being on YouTube, YouTube's all about the forum responses, the comments. And again, being, you know, a huge viral, you know, internet video success with the Guild, I can only imagine. Well, let me just get to my point.
Do they do comments on YouTube? I've never seen any. They do.
Occasionally, I've heard that people will
mail comments to the people they like.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. So I just need to check my PO box.
Yeah, you need to get ones. Yes.
So my question that has taken me forever to get to is: to what extent do you pay attention to the comments? Do you have to stop yourself at times? Do you ever find them valuable?
Or have you developed such an enormously thick skin that you can just take it all?
Comments are addicting because they can be helpful, and you can get ideas. You can get valuable feedback from comments. But, you know, the troll factor on YouTube especially, you know, there are a lot of... You know, when you're anonymous, you can say anything you want to say.
Sure.
And if people are genuinely good people, I think that they tend to realize that, even if I have a negative feeling about this video, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, and they leave, you know, either a neutral or positive comment. But then there are a lot of kids who just haven't learned better yet.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they will leave purely hateful comments
gay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's nothing constructive about those comments.
Right.
And at the beginning, those comments kind of set me back a little bit, and every once in a while they still might, but I think I've learned to not exactly thicken the skin, but just sort of ignore them and look past
Glaze
them.
Past them.
And sometimes people will they'll go to the trouble of sending a direct message through YouTube to me or even an email. And if I can tell it, if it starts off negative, I just delete it. Don't even read it.
Yeah.
So I've gotten to the point where I try to ignore the really positive ones and also the really negative ones and just sort of stay in the middle and not let myself get inflated or deflated too much. That's in a perfect world.
Right.
You know, on a bad day when L.A. traffic's been beating me down and I might have not gotten a job that I was up for, then they might affect me more than usual. What do you think, Kim?
Well, I had to stop reading them, really, for a while after Gorgeous Tiny went up. Well, but actually, here's an interesting thing with Gorgeous Tiny.
Gorgeous Tiny Chicken Machine Show.
Was it on YouTube or what was it on?
It was actually on, it's still on YouTube, and it's also on Crackle.com. It was purchased by Sony.
So very funny series. You did how many episodes?
24, I think.
We did 22 plus an unreleased episode.
Okay.
Yeah. So what was interesting about that was that we put the pilot up on Mediocre Films YouTube channel, and it went viral. And then we shot a second episode, and we put it up, and then about 2,000 people saw it. And a couple of people, and it didn't ever feel quite right to me.
2,000 people saw it in the 8 hours that we had released it.
Right.
Got it. Before we just changed our minds and took it down.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and we took it down, and it's the only time that we've ever done this. But, you know, there were comments like, this feels off, and here's why. And the people, they kind of nailed it. And I was like, you know what? I actually agree with this. And it wasn't that I was afraid and like, oh, God, people don't like it. Oh, no, I better not show it. It was like, oh, God, they're actually right. Like, I had kind of gone off and missed the mark. I didn't realize at the time that the character of Kiko needed to be positive 100% of the time.
Yes. Yeah.
She could never, you know, be suspicious or nervous, which she kind of was in this
episode. She was scared in that episode.
She was scared of some snakes that had jumped out of a jar. And, just a couple things. It was just a little bit off. And so we took it down and we reshot it based on those comments. So it's not something that it's not like a model that I think would ever happen again, but
they're just moments though that those comments can
and
sort
they,
of.
Yeah, they were constructive and they completely came from love. Like the people were just here's the deal. I love this show. So this is why I really think, you know, you kind of fucked yourself.
We could also talk about Telesh Mech Restaurant in as far as what feedback.
Please, please do.
So
give a brief setup of what you're talking about.
Yeah, I put up a video just about a month ago called Telesh Mech Restaurant, which stars a character named Yeshmin Blechin, who you referenced earlier. You'll have to sit sideways. You know, he's a very lonely, sad restaurant owner who, you know...
Is he intentionally specifically any particular ethnicity, or were you going...
He's intentionally vague.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so he could be everything. And he's a mix of a lot of things.
Yeah.
Because I it's not that I don't want to offend anyone. I want to offend everyone.
Right.
Sure.
So, basically, he's sad and lonely, which you don't really realize until as the thing goes on. You see he dines alone, and, you know, he refers to himself basically as a swinging single, but it's just obvious that he's a loner and always has been and always will be. And at the end of the commercial, when he's spouting off the extremely easy-to-remember phone number and repeats it, he can't even get through it the second time and pulls a gun out and shoots himself in the head.
Pretty graphically, actually.
Yeah, very yes. graphically.
Really graphically.
Well done.
Thank you so much. He blows his brains out, which to me is hilarious.
Yes.
And I showed the commercial to Kate. She hadn't seen it, so I showed it to her for the first time because I always love to get her feedback before I put something up.
Uh-huh.
She laughed the whole commercial, laughed and laughed, and then when that happened, she went, "Ooh, oh boy, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you want to put that up."
Yeah,
still not a fan.
I don't like. Well, it is graphic. So one thing you don't actually ever want to see is your husband blowing his brains out.
So, probably a different experience for you.
Yeah.
So for
now,
me,
here's
the
question:
the first part.
Would it still have been funny to you? Like, I mean, in the video, if you wanted to go and see it, he puts the gun in his mouth, and you see sort of blood spurting out of the top of his head.
Right, it's very
briefly.
Zapruder.
Would it be funnier if it sort of cut right on the gunshot?
That's what I thought it was going to do, but that's a joke that he'd already done with a video where I can't remember. Is the end of something? He's wearing a tutu, and he. So this is the second mediocre film in which Greg has committed suicide by gunshot through his mouth.
I see it, the running theme.
Do you think it was the blood? If it had been a hanging, if it would have been any different?
Yeah, it was just the blood. And you know what? It's because I can't tell the whole story of why, but I had seen somebody accidentally rented a VHS tape years ago that they thought was going to be a compilation of funny videos, and it ended up being a compilation of like a guy shooting himself in the head.
Like the many faces,
like a
of
faces
death.
Of death thing.
Yeah. So having actually seen that happen and then seeing like a replica of Greg doing it,
too real
it
for you.
Freaked me out. Yeah. But I thought it just was too graphic. I thought, you know, people would rather not see that.
So comments.
And Kim warned me that she said, "I don't think people are going to like it. I really think people are going to like it until the ending, and then they're really going to not like it."
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the percentage was of people who liked it versus people who didn't, but there were a large number of negative comments about the ending. Like, then some people got just pissed off. Some people unsubscribed because they didn't like the ending, and you know, and they 1 star just because of the ending. You know, it was funny until that, and then you ruined it. So just for them, there were so many comments, I decided to make an alternate ending just for them. And so 5 days later, I put up an alternate ending, and which starts off saying, you know, "Last week we released a video in which this happened, and then you liked it until the owner killed himself. So here, just for you." And then it shows the whole commercial. The whole commercial goes on. And then at the end, this is a spoiler alert, by the way.
Oh, God. And that's how he died.
All right, so at the end, as he's reciting the phone number, instead of pulling the gun out and shooting himself, you hear basically like a conveyor belt sort of thing. You hear, and you see another Yeshman Blechin rise up right next to him. And he rises, and then he pulls a gun out and shoots him in the head. So... which is my fun little way of saying, "Hey, I'm sorry you didn't like it, but perhaps you should go fuck yourself."
Right. I made my artistic decision.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, how successful was this video in relative terms to other videos that you put out on your channel?
It didn't go huge. You know, the first video to this point has maybe 75,000 views, and the alternate ending got about 60,000 or something. So
it's not like the ending swayed things one way or another on your channel, aside from a few people.
Oh no! It definitely is not a video that went viral. I consider when a video gets at least hundreds of thousands of views that it's going viral. Certainly, if it hits a million, it's going viral.
I'm gonna ask the question that everybody's thinking, and that we always get asked: what's your process? How do you write songs?
Where do you get your ideas?
That's not what I'm gonna ask. I'm gonna ask something equally annoying.
Oh, I thought you were gonna ask me how I wrote a song.
Yeah.
What makes a video go viral?
Boobs.
Boobs helps.
Boobs helps.
You know, you never know what is gonna resonate with people. Well, obviously, you do know there are some things that always resonate. Cleavage,
sure,
will resonate, and so sometimes I do resort to things that involve. Well, I like sex, so it's fun to include things that are sex related, as long as they're funny,
right.
Which sex
naturally is anyway.
Sure,
just a comical act.
Yes. Oh, absolutely, it is. It's very silly.
It should be accompanied by circus music at all times.
Well, the way you do it, especially.
Well.
What? No, it's because he juggles most of the time. No, this is exactly what we were hoping for
when
we
perfect.
Brought you guys in for this.
See, this is great. Fantastic. This is gold. So, but you were saying sex, funny boobs.
Boy, you never really know. I mean, some things, you know, I've made a lot of prank videos, and some of them go viral and some of them don't.
Let me ask you guys this. What number would you consider a video going viral to be, like, if somebody said, oh, my video got viewed by 1 million people, or my video got viewed by 20,000, like, what's the number?
I would think hundreds of thousands at least, and really true viral hit would have to be at least a couple million.
For me, I probably wouldn't think of a video as viral hit until at least 1 million.
Enough that, like, if you mentioned it at a party of, say, 50 or 60 people, at least a handful would go, yeah, I saw that the other day.
Yeah, because I feel like the one that you had that, there may have been one since, but the free hugs video definitely went viral.
Sure.
It's one that, you know, like, people from all walks of life passed that one around.
Please describe, and were you surprised that that one went viral?
Well, there's the free hugs video, which is a music video of a guy. I think it was shot in Australia originally. A guy standing in public with a free hug sign, and he gives hugs, and it's lovely and it's touching.
Makes you feel good.
It's very nice. It's a feel good video. So of course I decided to parody it with a video called $2 Deluxe Hugs, in which I found a free hugs guy, stood next to him with a sign which said Deluxe Hugs $2, and tried to get people not to go for the free one, but to pay $2 for the deluxe hug. And it was a lot of fun, and just shot that over a couple of hours and tried not to bug the guy too much, but just to keep it all in fun. And it did do well. It did, well, like 1.5 million views at YouTube, and I think about another 1 million views at different websites, other various websites. A lot of places picked it up, you know. So I know that did really make its way around. I was surprised at how many other websites had picked it up and how many people had stolen the video and re-uploaded it elsewhere. Yeah.
Well, the nice thing for me on that video is, you know, it's sort of busting on that sort of sappy, if we could all just hug, the world would be a better place culture. Right. But it's, and it gets its digs in, but it's, at its core, it's not mean-spirited.
Yeah, I prefer the pranks that aren't mean-spirited. Yeah. I like them to be all in fun and just, you know, basically it's really just an advertisement for capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I don't know. But more than anything, it's just silly fun.
The world needs love, but money makes the world go around.
That is right.
Burma
shave. Bam.
Burma shave. I get that reference, and many of your listeners do not.
No, I would say most.
Most do. But that guy doesn't.
No, that guy. Don't get me started on that guy.
Dick. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. I'm feeling pretty good about where we are.
Yeah, this was a very productive talk we've had here, I think.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we honestly, I say this sometimes, but we really have learned a lot today.
Yeah.
Now, will you put up the video portion?
I've been staring at this microphone the whole time.
I haven't been knowing whether I'm looking at the camera or not. We've got this microphone in front of us. I don't know. We'll see how it turns out.
It's been sort of like the Howard Stern show when they televise it.
Right.
Sort of like, okay.
Or Imus or something.
Right. He's sitting at the microphone kind of thing.
But because
just for the sake of if we do.
Good.
If you do, will you blur out me?
Kim's shy.
Well, this was just an audio podcast, not a video podcast.
Maybe we'll see if the public demands. We'll put up the audio, and if the public demands, maybe we'll put up the video.
Sitting here.
Yeah.
Because it is.
This is the special edition.
It is an exciting locked-off four-shot.
It is.
Yeah.
So, coming up, we are going to be in...
Let's see. By the time this is up, we'll be this Thursday in Vancouver.
Yeah, the
show is
Canadian.
Sold out, I do believe. Then Friday, I don't remember any of the numbers. Friday, we'll be at the Moore Theater in Seattle. And then Saturday we will be at the Aladdin Theater in Portland, Oregon. Oh, this is the first podcast since we have officially, formally announced that there are new Wootstocks coming. Wootstocks 2.0 and 2.1.
I think we announced it, but not the dates or the tickets.
Right,
were
well,
on
we,
sale.
We said they were going to happen. We didn't have, I don't know if we had the numbers or not, but yes, tickets should be on sale by the time you hear this podcast, or very soon thereafter. They were going to be also, once again, in May. I do not remember the numbers. I believe it's May 7th, May 8th, in Seattle and Portland, once again at the Moor and the Aladdin. And this is the show that we host along with Adam Savage from Mythbusters and Will Wheaton from the internet. And
we are working on the special guest. We can't say who is in the pipeline yet, but you're going to be very happy.
And there are lots. Yeah, good that you're pointing on the radio. Greg and Kim are trying to get themselves ingratiated into Wootstock. Yeah,
they are ingratiated. They're certainly ingratiated.
Actually, we did. We showed one of the gorgeous Tiny Chicken Machine shows at the first round of Wootstocks.
Go to
which Greg directed.
Yes,
we should mention.
And edited.
And there are more Wootstocks in the offing. Again, we cannot officially announce them because they are not 100%, but there will be more Wootstocks in more places this year.
Go to pollenstorm.com to find out more about that and also to find out how to become one of the members of the Brigade of Minions.
And that being said, I am Paul.
I'm Storm.
I'm Kim.
I'm Steve.
No,
and
you're not.
Actually,
I will be.
Okay.
I'm having a name change after this.
Okay.
And we've all been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Enjoy your delicious hum.
Go do things.
Go do things.
Merry heroes, unbinded sacred baggies. Swive out the rose and moon, be an endless temptation.
Yay!
If this is a doo-wop, please let me know. If this ain't love, you better let me know. If this is a doo-wop, please let me know. If this ain't love, you better let me know.
I've been drinking, you've been thinking, and I've been drinking. We both know that it's just not right. That you're pretending that it's not ending. You'd say anything to avoid a fight. Girl, don't lie and tell me that you need me. Girl, don't cry and tell me nothing's wrong. I'll be alright, oh, one way or another. So let me go, oh, make me want to stay. If this is it, ooh, please let me know.
Oh, this is great. If this is